Hey guys, welcome to the show. It's Culture Time. Today on tap, we have got Keanu Reeves' star-making vehicle, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Woohoo!
And Bogus Journey?
Maybe. I didn't watch that one. Hey everybody, this is Brian. I am coming at you live from Hemel's lavishly appointed podcasting studio, where we are midway through our season of discussing the cinematic oeuvre of Keanu Reeves and interrogating the American culture thereby.
Oh my. Oh my. We only have 10. We've got 10 episodes, right, this year?
Yeah, we had discussed doing 10 episodes 10. For this season, and this is episode number 5.
It is.
The classic Keanu Reeves, the movie that made modern Keanu, as we know him, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Bill and Ted's. We are just coming off of having talked about Hardball, a film that neither of us recommended that you go see. But Bill and Ted's is a freaking classic, and before we get into the plot, I want initial reactions.
I also want to say that though I lobbied hard for this episode being the duology of Bill and Ted movies, I neglected to go back and rewatch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and have almost no recollection of it.
Okay, I watched Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey, so I can fill in the gaps on Bogus Journey.
Initial reactions. It holds up pretty well. I remembered it fondly. I enjoyed watching it. I don't know that if you don't have any nostalgic fondness for this movie, you would enjoy it. I don't know if a 25-year-old would get much out of it.
Yeah, I don't know if it resonates today. Let's circle way back in time to when it was made.
1989.
It came out in 1989.
George H.W. Bush was in the White House. The nation was at war.
Do you remember? Because I think the nostalgia pull of this movie is so deep for people of our generation, do you remember the first time that you might have watched this film?
Gosh, good question. Yeah, this is definitely a Gen X cultural touchstone.
Right.
I don't remember the first time I watched this film. No, I'm sorry.
Because I think that it has a lot to do with how you view Keanu Reeves in general and has to do with how you would look at this movie now. So I have a very specific Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure memory.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Where I was probably about 10-ish, and we desperately wanted to watch this film because it had been all over the theaters, and I think people had been talking about it quite a bit, except it was PG-13, and we were not allowed to rent it. My dad...
Why? What's in it that's objectionable?
Well, here's the thing. My dad was going to let us rent the movie, and the lame-o behind the counter was like, sir, I don't know if you want your kids watching this movie.
Oh,
it's PG-13.
Come on, man.
I remember we were so close to being able to watch this dumb movie.
And some teenage cop at Blockbuster got in your way.
Total narc.
You suck, dude.
Yeah, ratted us out to our parents who were like, oh, I guess we can't let our kids watch this movie.
So I don't remember the first time I saw it, but I do remember clearly. I guess I was a little older than you. I was probably 12, 13. I had watched it, and all my friends watched it, and I was on a vacation, and a friend of mine was on, we were in Myrtle Beach, and a friend of mine, he either come with me or his family was staying there too, and they had Circle K's, the Circle K convenience store, which they have in the movie. They had them in Myrtle Beach. They did not have them in Virginia where we were from. We were ecstatic, and we took a picture of ourselves in front of the Circle K in homage to Bill and Ted.
I want to find a Circle K so I can take a picture now. I remember, I think I must have watched it at some point when I was a kid. I did that at a friend's house or something like that. But this most recent viewing feels like the first time that I've seen it all the way through, quite honestly.
So, Hemel, tell our listeners, for those who have not seen the film or cannot recall it clearly, what happens in the movie Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Well, Brian, the basic plot is two very likable, exaggerated California dudes.
California dudes. Classic Gen X California dudes.
Classic California dudes travel through time in a magic phone booth, mm-hmm. much like Doctor Who's TARDIS, mm-hmm. I assume.
Ooh, nerd reference.
And pull history figures out of historical context, take them back to San Dimas, California, for help on a history paper that they have to pass, because mm-hmm. if they don't... Then Ted, I believe it is.
They're going to fail their history class.
They're going to fail their history class, and Ted is going to get shipped off to military school in Alaska.
School.
And it's going to break up the band. The band Wild Stallions.
Wild Stallions. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's about it. I think that's
the
what
plot.
Happens.
And it's a very straightforward film.
Yeah, and I would, one thing I thought watching it is how badly the special effects aged, but I'm not sure if maybe even in 1989, these were deliberately cheesy special effects.
Yeah, I think that even in by 1989 standards, these were low-budget special effects.
Right, yeah, that's the campiness of it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the campiness of it. But why do you think that Bill and Ted's is such a cult classic?
Well, I think you referred to the characters as being very appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are. They're very lovable. Why are they so lovable? What makes them lovable? And I feel like this is a Keanu Reeves question.
Yes, this is a very good Keanu Reeves question because as we have talked about earlier, one of his strengths is likability.
Likability.
And
Hair.
And hair.
Which we should come back to because there's some solid hair acting in this movie. But yeah, I agree with you. The characters of Bill and Ted they're weird characters because A, they're almost identical. There's like Alex Winter plays presumably Bill.
He plays Bill.
And
Bill S. Preston
Bill
Esquire.
S. Preston and Ted Theodore Logan. Keanu's a little more of the comic relief and Alex Winter's a little more of the straight man, but
yes.
Not really.
But not by much.
Yeah, so you have two characters. They're essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
They undergo no arc at all. They are completely unchanged from scene one to the final scene in the movie, both of which are gigantic narrative no-nos.
Yet but it
works,
doesn't matter.
It works just fine.
It works totally fine.
Why do we like them as an audience?
They're presented so good-naturedly. There's no malice in anything that they do. It's merely born out of a kind of dumb enthusiasm for life.
Yes.
Versus any kind
of... They are dumbly enthusiastic about everything that befalls them.
Yeah. So the trope about the military school is actually really good, right? I think because it would take out everything that we like about the characters. They're embracing of life and their freedom and their joy in like stupid, simple things.
It's also such a dumb, if you were going to make a parody, you'd be like, I'm going to send you to military school if you don't pass your history class.
But what did you like about the characters?
I think you're right. They're dumbly enthusiastic. Yeah, they're really innocent, and they approach everything very much on its own terms. I actually read a little bit about the guys who wrote the characters wrote them as a sketch. Like,
yes.
It was all it was ever supposed to be, which is another reason why it shouldn't work. For a while there... Certainly in the 90s, probably in the early aughts, we were constantly exposed to this series of terrible movies where they would take a Saturday Night Live sketch that was maybe funny for 5 minutes and stretch it out for 90 and subject us to it.
That's basically every Adam Sandler movie ever made. Yeah.
But that's what this is, but somehow it's something's good about it.
Well, the characters are much better. And to get into...
They're barely even characters, though. They're not even acting, these two. They're just doing their line readings.
I think they're acting.
They're hardly acting.
It's very exaggerated, but they're so... You know, one of the things that I walked away with this from this movie feeling is that it is so absurdly optimistic and light and fun that it's almost an after-school special for history classes to watch now. Because there's just... Everything about it is so... I don't even understand why it's PG-13, aside from the fact that they use the word babes. It feels
movie,
like an after-school special by today's standards.
In the movie, Bill and Ted are going to face they're facing the failing in their history class.
Right.
And their professor... This doesn't make any sense, but it works for the movie. Instead of having to turn in a paper, everyone in the history class has to give a presentation in front of the whole school, which isn't how school works, as far as I recall. But nevertheless... And unless they get an A in their presentation, they're going to fail.
Right.
We later learn that in the future, Bill and Ted they have brought world peace and they have created an era of transcendental enlightenment
through
the music of their band, the Wild Stallions. And so George Carlin is sent back in time to arm them with time travel technology. So it doesn't even make any sense, but so they can go back into history, pull historical figures forward to San Dimas to present them to the class. And the class believes that they have done this whole thing and these are all actors.
Right. They don't actually believe that it's Socrates and Beethoven that have come to the class.
Yeah, those are such stupid jokes.
But they work.
Yeah, I forgive them in the context of the movie.
But they totally work. And a large part of why this movie totally works is that... Keanu Reeves and Alex Winters have really good chemistry, but Keanu Reeves is an ultimate heartthrob, like teen heartthrob in this film.
Is he? Do you think he's a teen heartthrob?
Oh, 100%. Hmm. He's so cute, and he's so, I don't know what to say, but he's very accessible. So like, he's not like the jock, right? Like, he's not like an unattainable jock type. He's a very cute, attainable dork.
Yeah, they're not jocks, but they're also not like, yeah, they're not nerds.
They're
like,
not nerds.
They're these like sort of stoner surfer guys. Yeah. I actually found this quote from the director, Stephen Herrick, who said this about the casting choice of Keanu Reeves. And this was Keanu Reeves' first starring role,
yeah,
we have discussed. So this is the movie that made Keanu in some ways. Stephen Herrick said, quote, "I think we saw every young guy in L.A. for the role. Keanu Reeves had this likability about him. He wasn't even trying to be funny. It was the way he would approach a line. After he said something, he'd have a quizzical look on his face."
That's like 90% of his acting.
Yeah, that's the Keanu Reeves acting method. You say something, you say the line, you don't try to inhabit the character because you're not the world's best actor, and then you just have an expression.
But it works so well because every line that Ted has in this film is like a one-liner punchline.
Yeah, he's
that's
always
how he
like
reads
pleasantly
it.
Baffled by what has just happened.
Which is his strength.
Well, I feel like we can move immediately to Hair. What was so great? You said that he's a heartthrob in this film, and you feel. What was so great about his hair?
The hair does so much work in this film. He has, it's not surfer hair, right? He does not have like Alex Winters is the blonde surfer hair.
It's more like skater hair.
It's like skater grown out shaggy hair that they overstyle to match his personality, right? Like there's so many times where it's like huge and blown out and adds to his aura of scatteredness.
Another thing he does in the movie that I think is, in many ways, he has never surpassed the pinnacle of his performance in this movie. One thing he does, in addition to his strengths and looking baffled and having good hair, is, I think we've talked before about he's a very physical actor.
Yeah.
Like, his best moments are sometimes when he isn't speaking, he's just moving through the set. This character is ridiculously floppy. He's just flopping around. His hair's flopping. His arms are flopping. His legs are flopping.
But that's what he becomes known for is that kind of physicality,
yeah,
right?
Like,
he moves his hands and he's very exaggerated, but it works.
And he would later parlay that into his stronger acting, his action movie roles.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, like we talked about. So yes. Jack Traynor, his role in Speed, where he's great and doesn't have a lot of dialogue, we're always watching Jack do something. And there it's very purposeful and it's very tough and it's
right,
very competent.
Right, right.
And here it's not, but we're still watching him do stuff.
And it's funny because I don't think that he does, throughout his career, he doesn't do much physical comedy. Is this...
No, yeah. Did he ever do another comedy?
I was going to say, did he ever do another straight comedy?
No, I don't think he did.
Because this is a comedy, right?
This is a comedy. He made one great comedy.
He made one great comedy.
And then he went out on a high note.
What is the most Keanu moment in a movie that is basically full
yeah,
of Keanu moments?
This movie is all Keanu moments. There's a moment that I love in the movie. And I think it's a moment when he transcends the baffled, quizzical puppy dog look. And he beams. He just gives you this moment of great joy and innocence, and it's near the very end. They have they've brought all these historical figures through time to their California town. All the historical figures have come forward on stage to do their bit. The crowd loves it. The teacher can't believe how great that is. The other kids are on their feet, and Socrates, who's one of the so they bring like a dozen historical figures.
Yeah, Napoleon, Socrates, everybody.
Socrates is one of the few who are sketched a little more as characters. And what it's charming about that is Socrates does not speak English. He only speaks ancient Greek. So he's speaking in ancient Greek to the school. Keanu, Ted, is translating for him. He's saying Socrates is waving his hands and he's speaking really beatifically and enthusiastically to the crowd. Keanu is mimicking his energy. And then he pauses and he says, he loves San Dimas. And he doesn't say it as like a finale line. He says it in this really like deep, heartfelt way.
Yeah.
And you get like, oh, this kid loves San Dimas too. And he's like, he's so pleased that Socrates loves this little California town.
And that's what makes the movie so good and makes them so likable is that they're not jaded jerks who hate
their body.
There's no irony at all, right? Like, they don't hate San Dimas. They actually love San Dimas, and they are very excited to have Socrates love seeing
yeah,
Demas.
They loved learning about history to yes. their own surprise.
And that's what makes me think that I'm like, why don't they actually just show this movie in school? Because it feels like...
Wow, you don't actually learn much about history.
No, you don't actually learn much. I'm actually kidding. Like, but it does feel so genuine and... it is not of the time. There's all these things about it that are very 80s, right? Like everything about the movie is like aggressively 80s, except for the tone.
But you often point, you often ask the question of whether or not a given Keanu movie could be made today. This one, I feel like, could not be made today because if you brought modern comedic sensibilities to bear on it, it's so, we're so heavily about irony and layers of things that
yeah.
you wouldn't have the sensibility to make this movie today.
Yes. Okay, one thing, you are a nerd.
I am of the nerdish culture, yes.
I have watched a lot of superhero things recently.
Well,
and
we all have as a nation. That's what we've committed to doing.
One thing that they tell you, though, is that you should never mess with time and that it would mess everything up. So,
well, that's
what
if you care about continuity.
Well, this is the thing.
This movie doesn't care about
this
continuity.
This movie does not care at all about the insane ramifications of bringing Socrates into the 21st century.
Well, because that's something, the one thing that is kind of genuinely smart about the movie is they play, so the core technology of time travel is played for laughs repeatedly, right?
Right?
Later, they need to find the keys to his dad's car, and Bill says, wait, just go back in time later with the time machine and get yourself the keys. And the keys fall out of the sky. And then later his dad's coming after him and a trash can just falls out of the dad's head. And he's like, oh, I got to remember to go back later and put a trash can on my dad's head. So they're making fun of the fact that it's a time travel movie.
I know, but I'm saying that if this movie were being made today, there's a lot of time travel shit that we would have to talk about.
Another thing I read that was interesting is, so the role of Rufus, their time traveling Sherpa, is played by the late, great George Carlin. The original idea was to have that role go to a serious actor. Sean Connery was their choice for it, to kind of play off the nuttiness, the wackiness of the Bill and Ted. And they ended up almost by happenstance with George Carlin. And it's hard to imagine someone else playing that role now.
No, I think George Carlin is great for it. Sean Connery, I don't know if he's capable of poking fun at himself.
Yeah, George
like
Carlin's
that.
Very tongue-in-cheek. Like,
yeah.
It's very obvious that he's in a stupid movie and he's fine with it.
So this movie was a huge unexpected success, and they went on to make Bogus Journey.
Yes. Can you tell us about Bogus Journey?
There's too much plot in Bogus Journey. I know Sari had... our friend Sari Wiener, who is a devoted listener of the podcast, had mentioned that she thought that Bogus Journey often gets dismissed. And from the preview, I thought it was going to be terrible, but I surprisingly enjoyed it. Bogus Journey, there is an evil overlord from the future who sends two robot Bill and Teds back in time to kill our original heroes, Bill and Ted. But then Bill and Ted actually do die, and then they have to go through death and heaven to get back.
Oh, right. And death is their buddy in the movie.
And death is their buddy in the movie so that they can go back to San Dimas and save the princesses that they picked up in Excellent Adventure and win the Battle of the Bands so that they can, you know, make their great songs and become famous.
That's the plot. And they are currently producing a third Bill and Ted movie.
I don't know how that's going to go.
I can't help but feel like Keanu is maybe throwing a bone to Alex Winter, whose career did not achieve the same heights that Keanu's did.
And that's really, I'm surprised that Alex Winter absolutely went nowhere after this.
Yeah, he was in The Lost Boys. He was one of the vampires.
Oh, was he?
He's the vampire who looks like Alex Winter.
Yeah.
And then nothing. I don't think anything else I can think of him in.
Bogus Journey tries to advance the plot in certain ways in that now Bill and Ted work at the pretzel stand at the mall and want to marry the girls that they picked up in the first movie. And there's a really cute scene where they do like a joint proposal. But the entire movie is so about bros, like 1980s bros, right?
And Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure skates by just on the edge of being bro-y, but not being bro-y.
Yeah, it's not objectionable. Though, one thing, if we're talking about Keanu Reeves and American culture, they use a gay slur in both films that you would never hear today.
I don't remember. remember that scene.
Oh my God. There's definitely a strong no homo scene where they hug.
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
then they drop Absolutely. Like the gay slur. And
yeah, that was just what you did for a cheap laugh in 1989.
And that's what you did. But it's like throwing a bone to the fact that, like, oh, they're super close. But
yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's a really, I remember that now. That's a really discordant note because one of the strengths of those two is their, like, obvious affection for one another. They're so on each other's wavelength.
Right.
But yeah, the fact that they can't hug without, you know, that.
Without
dumb,
throwing
moment.
That in there, which is really unfortunate. And I wish they would release a cut with that just taken out.
Now, you mentioned the mall. I would say the movie's greatest set piece is when all of the historical figures are at the mall doing crazy crap.
Yes.
It's probably the most iconic segment of the movie. It doesn't make any sense. Like, why did they take him to the mall? Why do they all go nuts in the mall? Why does Joan of Arc, played by Jane Wedlin of the Go-Go's...
What? Is that who that is?
That's Jane Wedlin, yeah.
Keanu has such a rich history with rock stars in his
films.
Yes.
The various members of the Chili Peppers are in every one of his movies by contractual obligation. Jane Wedlin, of course, the original guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, so that's what happens here. But she gets up on, and she takes over an aerobics class.
Yeah, she takes over an aerobics class.
They're not even trying to make sense.
Genghis Khan destroys a sporting goods store. But it's wonderful. It's such a time capsule into 80s culture, like some 30 years later.
Yeah, so where would you put this movie? Looking at Keanu's long history of film and this being, his touchstone, his taking off point, where would you rank this in the definitive ranking of Keanu movies?
I don't know. Honestly, I think it'll have to be, I know this is the movie that made him a star, but it'll be pretty low for me.
Oh yeah? How so? Why? Why is this one low of all the Keanu movies? It's so Keanu.
I know it's so, but are we talking about me as a person or are we talking about like in... the canon overall.
Yes, when you look at Keanu's performance in this film as it relates to the larger project of Keanu-ness, where does this fit?
I would say it's probably top six.
That's weirdly specific. Yeah, I feel like it would have to be because, again, like he set, like as we remarked in our first episode, Point Break, which maybe made him... Point Break, which is more the modern template for the movies he would go on to do.
Yes.
Catherine Bigelow, the director, specifically wanted him for that role because of his work. And again, I have no idea how she saw this, but because of his work in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Because it hits all three things. Hair, likability, and unflappability.
Yeah, they are unflappable in
this
movie.
Just roll with every single thing that happens to them. They're just like... oh, man, we're going to fail. No, we're totally going to make it.
Bogus.
Yeah. And overall, the message of the film is actually wonderfully sweet. Be excellent to each other.
It's true. So this is Keanu's only role. This is his first and only role as a teen heartthrob. So this is interesting.
Oh.
After he made this movie, he probably could have coasted on some sort of teen heartthrob status, but chose not to.
There was a time where Keanu could have gone art house right after Bill and Ted's, right? He does River's Edge, My Own Private Idaho. His career was leaning art house indie film.
I don't think he has the chops to do art house indie film.
Yeah, I'm just saying that that's where it was going, but then he made Point Break and boom, he's an action star.
That in an alternate timeline, Keanu was a failed art indie actor that no one knows about, and we are doing a podcast about Alex Winter.
Can't wait to visit that reality. All right, guys.
President in that way.
Thank you for hanging out with us. If you are listening to us on iTunes, please rate and review us. You can also find us on Stitcher and on Spotify under Culture Time, as well as Audio Boom.
If you have any thoughts about our podcast to date, get at us on Twitter. I'm at Brian Minter. Hemel's at Hemel Javari. And I don't know that we're entirely set on the next five movies we're going to do in our Keanu Reeves film oeuvre. So if you have strong feelings, we would love to hear about them.
Yes, please let us know. And thanks for listening, guys.